This is Washington Watch with Tony Perkins, powered by the Family Research Council, your embassy of faith, family, and freedom in the heart of our nation's capital. Now, here's your host, FRC President Tony Perkins. Sitting in for Tony today is the producer of Washington Watch, Russ Jones.
During my first week in office, I reinstated a policy first put in place by President Ronald Reagan, the Mexico City policy. I strongly supported the House of Representatives' pain-capable bill, which would end painful late-term abortions nationwide. And I call upon the Senate to pass this important law and send it to my desk for signing. We are protecting the sanctity of life and the family as the foundation of our society. But this movement can only succeed with the heart and the soul and the prayer of the people.
That was President Trump speaking at the 45th annual March for Life held in Washington, D.C. today. Welcome to Washington Watch. Indeed, I am Russ Jones sitting in for Tony Perkins. It's Friday, and it's great to be with you. So President Trump, you ready for this? Was the first sitting U.S. president to address the event via satellite from the White House in the March for Life's 45-year history. The event is the largest pro-life gathering in the United States. In just a moment, we'll talk with Jeannie Mancini, president of the March for Life. And as we continue to report, major news out of the Department of Health and Human Services with the announcement of the new Division of Conscience and Religious Freedom. Friend to FRC, Dr. Everett Piper, president of Oklahoma Wesleyan University, spoke at the HHS yesterday. And representing education, he'll be here to share his thoughts about this new division. And earlier today, the Family Research Council hosted the ProLifeCon Digital Action Summit. It's an annual event that serves up speakers and tools for pro-life advocates to advance the cause in protecting the unborn. Strong pro-life Congressman Senator Lindsey Graham was one of our featured speakers. He'll be here in just a little bit. He talked with Tony Perkins after the event, and we'll bring you that interview. Government shutdown, standoff, we're all biting our nails waiting to see. And of course, we'll take your calls towards the end of the program. You can get all of this great content at TonyPerkins.com. You can follow Tony on Twitter at T Perkins. You can also follow me at Russ Jones Speaks. Well, over 100,000 Americans traveled across the country today to our nation's capital for the 45th annual March for Life, a demonstration that stands against the greatest human rights violation of our time, abortion on demand. Joining us now, after a big day on the National Mall, is Jeannie Mancini, president of March for Life. Welcome back to Washington Watch.
Oh, thanks for having me, Russ.
Well, you do such a great job. Tell us all about it. Give us the highlights.
Wow. Well, I'm still sort of processing it all, but I mean, to tell you the truth, the highlight for me, even on a historic moment like today, the highlight is always the young people. It's pretty unlike anything else I've ever experienced, where you're planning and planning and planning literally for a year for this event. And as you can imagine, the details get a little bit stressful leading up to it. And you get up on stage and look out to that crowd and just the energy of the young people and really the sea of people today. I couldn't even see to the back of where they were because of the press riser for the media team and things like that. And it was just unbelievable just to have everyone there and the energy and all of that. So it's a pretty, on one hand, it's a pretty remarkable day. I mean, in so many ways, here we are coming together. Now, on the other hand, it's also a somber day because, of course, we're marking the anniversary of Roe versus Wade and legalized abortion in the United States, where we've lost over 60 million Americans to this in the last 45 years. And so, of course, that is, you know, a moment to really grieve over the loss of life and what that means for our country. And it's our hope to not continue marching 45 more years. And we've got a lot in the works strategically with marchers to continue marching year round. You might have heard about it at the rally today. So anyways, it's been, you know, a wonderful day in a lot of ways. And of course, on the other hand, we remember the somber reality of why we're here and why we march.
Yeah, and that's got to be rather surreal to see all those people and know how much money and time it took for them to get there, first of all, and, you know, the hotel rooms and gas and long drives and whatnot, and also the gravity. But what a difference a year makes, right? It wasn't too long ago President Obama celebrated the anniversary of the Supreme Court's 73 Roe v. Wade decision that declared
right.
abortion a constitutionally protected right. And now we have a new administration that actually came out, spoke from the Rose Garden, and that was projected at your event.
Yes. Yes. I mean, what a difference a year makes. We've really seen so many victories for life in this administration's first year. And it's so exciting, you know, to reflect upon that. I was just having the chance to review the president's remarks, I could hear them a little bit from where I was, and I could see a little bit, but I haven't been able to really sink into them. But he recalled some of them, including reinstating and even broadening the Mexico City policy. He didn't mention this, but he's made incredible nominations at the judicial level, both at the Supreme Court and the lower courts, the appeals and the district courts. And he's done so very many other things as well.
And, of course, Vice President Pence assured the crowds gathered in support of the pro-life movement that they were gaining ground in support. He said, "Your compassion, consistent activism, and prayers are saving lives," he told the crowd. So you had a great all-star lineup of people who are strong pro-life advocates. Now, you mentioned being encouraged by seeing all the young people. Are attitudes being changed? It seems like they are.
I think so. An opinion poll that came out just this week from Marist Polling, which is relied on by the McClatchy, by NBC, by Wall Street Journal, so they're, you know, popularly, you know, leaned on and trusted, came out, and there were a few things. The first is that the few things that we can glean from that. The first is that for the 10th year in a row, the large majority of Americans would limit abortion much more than it is limited in this country now. They would limit it at most to the first 3 months of pregnancy. And that is 78% of Americans. And we're talking 10 years in a row, where nearly 8 in 10 people would limit abortion at most to the first 3 months of pregnancy. And that includes people who self-identify as being pro-choice. The other thing is that the majority of Americans also believe that abortion is morally wrong, and the majority of Americans believe that abortion harms women, that it does more harm than good for women in society. So all of those things, I think, are reflections of changing hearts and minds and doing our best, you know, to build a culture of life.
Yeah, and you know, a little later in the show, we're going to hear from Senator Lindsey Graham, as you know, huge pro-life advocate and lawmaker on the Hill, and he's pushing for the Pain-Capable Unborn Child Protection Act. It's just hideous that we're one of seven nations that still allows abortion at 5 months. And we talked about this earlier on the show about trying to talk with people, you know, unbelievers and people that are leery about abortion and all that. Just look at the science. If science is telling us that an unborn baby can feel pain at 5 months, then we need to listen to that, right?
Absolutely. Absolutely. And really, I mean, some of these incremental laws, as we use that language sometimes, also help not only to limit abortions. We know that any abortion is one too many, but even if we can work towards limiting them, that's moving in a good direction.
Right.
But they also educate. And the Pain-Capable bill, not only would it limit, but as you're mentioning, we do know, you know, the science of fetal pain. And we know that at that time in pregnancy, around 20 weeks, that the pain receptors are actually developing in a way that pain is even more intense than it is once a child is born, is brought to term. So, yes, I mean, the humanity of the child is extraordinarily important. And, yes, these little ones feel pain.
And you had House Speaker Paul Ryan there. Let's take a listen to what he had to say.
I am so proud of the work that this movement has done to help women. especially women who have gone through the pain of abortion. This movement helps them find healing and acceptance. I'm so proud of this movement and how it supports single mothers who are struggling to raise their children, how it gives them the resources through thousands of phenomenal crisis pregnancy centers around the country. This is the face of the pro-life movement. People come from all over the country. You march with your churches. You march with your friends, your neighbors. You are marching with joy and hope, not with anger and hate. You don't see that on the other side, do you?
Well, those are really great points. And it's so true. You look at the crowd. I was watching, on cable, and the people there are smiling and joyful, even though it represents a very painful part of our history and what we're doing. But the other side, you just don't see that, do you?
No, it's true. And our theme this year was love saves lives, love saves lives. And it's so beautiful because many of our speakers really embodied that in their stories that they shared. And the marchers certainly embody that with their joy and their love.
So tell us now what the march, you've worked really hard for this big day. What happens now? Where do you go? How do you keep the momentum going?
Well, thank you for asking that. In fact, we have a program this year, and we're really, really excited about this, where we are inviting marchers to make a difference year-round. And what we're doing is having people send us their contact information so that we can stay in touch with them. And then once a month, we are organizing around one way to influence the public square, in a powerful way. So, for example, right when marchers go home on Monday, they are going to hear from us about Planned Parenthood and about defunding Planned Parenthood. And every single month, there's going to be a new thing to focus on, and we are going to take those voices and send them to Congress and let them know that pro-life Americans want, life-affirming and life-protective policies enacted. So we're very excited about that. If your listeners would like to join into that, what they can do is text the word MART to 70375. I'm hoping and praying I have that little text number right because I'm doing it by memory right now. But it's the word MART, and I believe it's to 70375.
And text MART, and what will happen?
Oh, and then you'll immediately get three simple questions back, but you'll get hooked up to our year-long campaign where we will basically tell you what to do once a month to send a message to your member of Congress about certain things. So starting on Monday, we're going to start with defunding Planned Parenthood. So you'll hear from us on Monday. And every month, we're going to, the mission at the March for Life is to take the collective voice of pro-life Americans to the public square. So we're going to be doing that in a very concerted way once a month throughout the year.
That's great to hear because, the other side's been pretty savvy at technology, so it's great to hear this. Jeannie Mancini, thank you so much. Congratulations on a great day and a great March for Life today. Thanks for taking time to come on and tell us all about it.
Well, thank you so much. Thanks for interviewing me.
All right. You have a blessed day. Thank you. That's Jeannie Mancini, president of March for Life. Text the word MARCH to 70375, and you'll get all the information you need to be a warrior for the unborn. Well, coming up next, the Department of Health and Human Services is taking major actions to protect conscious rights in life. Dr. Everett Piper, president of Oklahoma Wesleyan University, he's in Washington, D.C., and has been in the mix of that discussion. He'll be here when we return.
What does sex trafficking, abortion, and pornography have in common? A lot, as it turns out, and all three are on the rise across the world. Today, almost 45.8 million people live in slavery around the world, and around 4.5 million people are slaves in the sex industry. Those who consume pornography are much more likely to seek women for paid sex, many of whom are victims of sex trafficking. Each click of pornography creates demand for more pornography and brings in a profit to the sex industry. The demand causes traffickers, pimps and those involved in the sex industry to abuse their victims by filming them in sex acts. To learn more about the link between these issues and to find out how you can help stop it, go to frc.org/traffic. Again, that's frc.org/traffic.
Gender reassignment surgery. Once rare and unusual, it is now becoming more and more common. Across the nation, transgender activists are pushing for this costly, extreme, and unproven procedure to be declared medically necessary so that it can be paid for with taxpayer dollars. The problem for these activists is that the evidence is not on their side. In 2016, the Centers for Medicare and Medicaid Services examined 33 studies on the subject and declared that there was not enough evidence to determine whether gender reassignment surgery improved health outcomes. One study found that those who had undergone gender reassignment surgery showed a suicide rate that was 19 times higher than the general population. Declaring gender reassignment surgery to be medically necessary is not only inaccurate, but dangerous. To view FRC's full report on this important issue, visit frc.org/surgery. Again, that's frc.org/surgery.
Is being right enough to win an election? Many tend to believe that being right, in the sense of being factually correct, is sufficient to win in politics. Unfortunately, political history proves otherwise. The candidate who organizes and communicates the best will beat the opposition, no matter how right the other side is. Christians who are running for public office have a moral obligation to study and learn how to win. They must discover the real nature of politics. Robert Arnakis knows how to win. As Senior Director for the Leadership Institute, the nation's premier public policy training organization, he has 15 years of grassroots organizing, campaign, fundraising, and communications experience, and has established himself as one of the country's top political trainers. Hear Mr. Arnakis discuss the real nature of politics and how to overcome the odds to win an election. Go to frc.org/speakers to view this timely discussion.
Welcome back to Washington Watch. It's Friday. Happy Friday. You glad it's Friday? It's been a big day. It's been a big couple of days for the pro-life movement. I'm Russ Jones, sitting in for Tony Perkins. You're listening to the Washington Watch, powered by the Family Research Center Council. And today, the Department of Health and Human Services announced two major actions to protect life and the conscious rights of Americans: provider choice in Medicaid and enforcement of conscious protections from the beginning to the end of life. And yesterday, our friend, friend to the Family Research Council, and has been a guest host on this program, Dr. Everett Piper, he joined other leaders in speaking at the Department of Health and Human Services event in Washington, D.C. And he joins us now. He's the president of Oklahoma Wesleyan University in Bartlesville, Oklahoma. Dr. Piper, great to have you on.
Hey, Russ. Thanks for having me.
So you've had a big time there in Washington, D.C. You got to speak at HHS yesterday and been on the edges there with the big march today.
Yeah, in fact, I'm standing here in Washington, D.C. as we speak. I stepped inside a storefront to avoid some of the traffic noise for you. So I'm still here.
Well, thank you. Tell us about your presentation. Of course, I had the chance to listen to your presentation. Very good, as always. Would expect nothing else. And the HHS and I was on a press conference call today, as I believe you were, getting the details that the government will no longer be hostile towards religious rights, and they're giving enforcement tools to the division.
Yeah, basically, in my speech, I pointed out the fact that, as I've talked on this program many a time, the world is upside down. We live at a time of great reversals, where bitter is sweet, and sweet is bitter, and black is white, and white is black, and good is evil, and evil is good. We actually have, for the past decade or so, had the federal government telling nuns that they've got to purchase contraception, and the pro-life women at Oklahoma Wesleyan University, likewise, that we have to purchase abortion-inducing drugs. And we actually have the courts being arrogant enough to think that they can actually redefine a sacrament of the church, i.e. marriage. And I said, in conclusion, in spite of the fact that a new division of conscience and religious freedom shouldn't be necessary because all of the government should be that division, protecting our First Amendment rights. But in this world of upside-down opposites, I am still grateful for the fact that the Trump administration and HHS and OCR are actually doing this and creating this vision. I actually took the podium with a bit of a smirk and a smile. I said, boy, is it good to be in Washington, D.C. and meeting with HHS and OCR and thanking you rather than suing you.
Yes, I saw that in your video. And on the press call this morning, I was struck by a statistic that 34 conscience complaints have been filed since President Trump was elected, compared to 10 during the Obama administration, 8 years.
So really, let's just round these numbers off. We had one per year during the Obama administration, and already this year we've had 34. Now, why is that? Could it be that people for the previous decade felt intimidated and cowed into silence because they were afraid to speak up and say their First Amendment had been compromised, whereas today they're actually emboldened a bit because they don't fear HHS and they don't fear OCR? And I can speak personally to that. I received the Dear Colleague letters from OCR and HHS demanding that I compromise my Christian identity at Oklahoma Wesleyan and provide transgender accommodations on my campus. I know what that threat feels like. I know what that intimidation feels like. And I also know many of my colleagues and peers in the Christian college community did remain silent because they were running in fear of losing their accreditation and their funding, et cetera. So I know that people were silenced as a result of these threats. And today, the tables have turned. We actually have an HHS and an OCR that supports us rather than threatens us.
Right. And HHS is essentially saying this brings parity among all civil rights complaints by bringing life and religious liberty into parity with other civil rights. Wouldn't you agree?
Yes. And we do have to remember that the first right in the First Amendment is religious freedom and freedom of conscience. So it not only brings parity, but perhaps it even puts the first thing back where it belongs, because if we don't get the first thing right, as C.S. Lewis and others have told us, we never get the second things. So we have to recognize the value of getting this first right, this first thing back from HHS and OCR, and we should just be grateful for it.
And the regulation will require recipients of federal funds to certify that they are in compliance with federal law on civil rights, to inform people of their conscious rights, and to keep records to establish compliance, and to not retaliate against those who do file a complaint. It's a new day.
It is a new day. And again, I tweeted today, you know, because I had my reservations with regard to Donald Trump, and I spoke about them quite forthrightly. And there are still things in terms of his moral decisions and his personal life that I take issue with. But all that aside, it's time to just say thank you. Even though you may disagree with someone, even though you may not like what they do in terms of some previous decisions or their vocabulary or whatnot, mm-hmm. We just need to say thank you.
Yes. A point well taken, good point. And you've also said it's sad that we even have to be here at this point in time to have a division, isn't that right?
Yeah, as my concluding comments in my speech were, even though it shouldn't be necessary to even have this division, mm-hmm. because all of the government, by definition, is that division, because all elected officials take an oath of office to defend the Constitution. So why do we need this division? Well, we need it because people don't keep their word, and finally in an HHS that recognizes that we need to return to a day of constitutional law rather than these Dear Colleague letters that circumvent that law.
So you're going to wrap things up there, go back, and what are you facing? Are you seeing improvements? Just real quickly, we've got about 20 seconds.
Yeah, I'm heading back home with great hope and great thanks. I'm grateful for this move, grateful for HHS and OCR actually supporting us.
Well, Dr. Piper, go have a good dinner. I love D.C. food. So thank you so much for taking time to be with us on Washington Watch.
Blessings, Russ.
Blessings to you. That's our friend, Dr. Everett Piper, president of Oklahoma Wesleyan University in Bartlesville, Oklahoma. Well, the Family Research Council hosted its annual ProLifeCon Digital Action Summit earlier today. When we return, FRC President Tony Perkins talks with Senator Lindsey Graham, one of the featured speakers. You're listening to Washington Watch. I'm Russ Jones, sitting in for Tony Perkins.
What does sex trafficking, abortion, and pornography have in common? Pornography fuels the sex trafficking industry. Each click of pornography creates a demand for more pornography and brings in a profit to the industry. The demand causes traffickers, pimps, and those involved in the sex industry to abuse their victims by filming them in sex acts. Victims of sex trafficking are often coerced into having abortions. To learn more about how you can help stop this triple threat, go to frc.org/traffic.
Is being right enough to win an election? Political history proves otherwise. The candidate who organizes and communicates the best will beat the opposition, no matter how right the other side is. Christians who are running for public office have a moral obligation to study and learn how to win. They must discover the real nature of politics. Robert Arnakis is one of the country's top political trainers. Hear him discuss the real nature of politics and how to overcome the odds to win an election at frc.org/speakers. The Family Research Council had the pleasure of hosting Dr. Michael Paulson to speak about how Christians can respond to arguments against religious liberty. Dr. Paulson argues that religion is different and deems exemptions within the law. A religious person believes in God, and God's sovereignty requires complete devotion, whereas government only requires allegiance and civil duties. The Constitution itself treats religion differently, giving America religious liberty and the freedom to exercise. Visit frc.org/university to hear more about this issue.
If you had to make a law, where would you start? America's founding fathers determined law from a fixed source, God, but culture has shifted the focus to man's self-determined law. If truth is no longer determined by God, it becomes subjective and open to interpretation. In an incisive new paper, Peter Johnston traces the origins of these dangerous trends in American law and the importance of staying true to our founding principles. To view FRC's new publication, go to frc.org/decay.
Welcome back to Washington Watch. I'm Tony Perkins. I wanted to jump in here because this morning the Family Research Council hosted the 13th annual ProLifeCon. Now, this is a digital action summit, an event that provides pro-life activists the necessary tools to advance the pro-life movement. We had folks from across the country connecting, but we had some of the pro-life leaders here in Washington, D.C. speaking. And one of our featured speakers was Senator Lindsey Graham of South Carolina. And I pulled him into the studio so we could pick his brain on a couple of things. Senator, welcome back to Washington Watch.
Well, since I'm in the Senate, it won't take very long to pick my brain.
You're actually one of my favorite guests because I actually like to have substantive conversations to educate our community, and you always provide that, especially on the foreign policy issue. I like to talk to you. I need to get you on a little more often.
Yeah, well, there's a lot going on.
But let's talk about you're leading the effort in the Senate on the Pain-Capable Unborn Child Protection Act, right? And we're going to see a vote.
Yeah, we are. So majorities matter. I know you get frustrated with a Republican majority at time. I get frustrated myself. But majorities matter. Mitch McConnell is going to allow us to vote on this legislation. It would never come to a vote if Mitch were not in charge. So to all those who put up the signs and knocked on the doors, this is an effort. This is payoff. You get to debate something worth debating from the pro-life point of view. So we're going to have a vote. What am I trying to accomplish here? There are one of seven nations in the entire planet that allow abortion on demand in the fifth month.
Name some of those other countries.
China, Iran, and it doesn't get much better. So
that's not good company to keep.
I have no desire to be in that list. So here's the question for the country. Why are we still in that list? And what good comes from staying on the list? In the fifth month of the pregnancy, medical science tells us that the baby can feel pain. So a doctor operating on the unborn child to save their life provides anesthesia. That's the standard of care. Why? Because the baby feels pain. The pain nerve endings are well developed. I don't want to have a country. I don't want to be in one of seven countries that allow abortion on demand. If a doctor has to give you anesthesia to save your life, why should we allow the baby to be torn apart? What good comes from that? In the fifth month of pregnancy, medical encyclopedias encourage young parents to sing to their child because they can recognize your voice. There are actually people alive today who were born at 20 weeks.
Right.
But this is a different theory. Roe v. Wade says the only time the government can get involved on behalf of the unborn is medical viability. Well, in 1973, medical viability was at one stage. Today is much further advanced. The theory of the case, Tony, is that constitutionally the government should be allowed to protect all citizens, including the unborn, from excruciatingly painful procedures. So this is not medical viability. This is making the argument that legislative bodies like the Congress in 20 states who've passed this law have a compelling state interest to protect a child from death by excruciating pain.
This also is known. Now, what this does, folks, is so very clear on this. It's passed the House by a vote of 237 to 189. It's known by a couple of different names, pain capable. It is the 20-week ban, the 5-month. I like the 5 months because it points a pretty good picture. After 5 months, when a child can feel pain and, as you said, in many cases is viable, that abortion would then be illegal. This is also known as Micah's Law.
Right.
Because Micah is one of those children that was born at this stage of the pregnancy.
Well, from a politician's point of view, you want more voters, not less. So here's what I'm trying to accomplish. I'm trying to get us out of a club of seven. This is 2018, for God's sakes. President Trump says he wants to make America great again. And I want to help him in every turn. The question, does this make America a better place to allow abortion on demand when most countries don't? What good comes from a society organized around the proposition that you can abort a baby at the fifth month, even though they feel excruciating pain? If this is not a compelling interest for the government, what would be?
Right. All right, Senator Graham, when will we see the Senate act on this?
Soon. If you get a chance, thank Mitch McConnell, because he's making this a priority for us in the Senate. We're not going to get 60 votes, but we're going to get over 50, I hope. 20 states have passed this. Remember the partial birth abortion debate? It took us about 15 years.
Right.
I was the chief author of the Unborn Victims of Violence Act. Remember, Lacey Peterson right. was killed by her husband.
Right.
Under California law, he was charged with two crimes. It was the baby was like 8 months along. He was charged with the crime of killing the mother and the baby. So through our efforts, people like you, it is now a federal law that if you attack a pregnant woman, then you can be charged for two crimes, not one. That took years. This is going to take a few years, but 54% of pro-choice Americans support this legislation when they understand what we're trying to do.
What do our listeners need to do at this point?
Educate everybody that you can get your hands on. Call into the Senate to urge a yes vote. If it's not the law in your state, start an effort to make sure that a state version of this bill becomes the law in your state. Get on the phones, call the Senate, but start talking to everybody within your sphere of influence about what we're trying to do. Tony, we're trying to do a good thing, not a bad thing.
All right, Senator, 20 seconds. Are we going to see Planned Parenthood defunded by Congress?
I hope so. I don't know exactly how this shutdown ends, but you have my support for that, and time will tell.
Senator, thanks for being a part of Pro-Life Con. Thank you for leading on the Pain Capable Unborn Child Protection Act and for all of the life initiatives that you undertake.
God bless you and yours.
All right. Senator Lindsey Graham, when we come back, I'm going to toss it back to Russ Jones, and he's going to be taking your phone calls on this Friday edition of Washington Watch. Check out the website, TonyPerkins.com. If you're on Twitter, you can keep up with me at T. Perkins. Don't go away. We're back with more after this.
What does sex trafficking, abortion, and pornography have in common? A lot, as it turns out, and all three are on the rise across the world. Today, almost 45.8 million people live in slavery around the world, and around 4.5 million people are slaves in the sex industry. Those who consume pornography are much more likely to seek women for paid sex, many of whom are victims of sex trafficking. Each click of pornography creates demand for more pornography and brings in a profit to the sex industry. The demand causes traffickers, pimps, and those involved in the sex industry to abuse their victims by filming them in sex acts. To learn more about the link between these issues and to find out how you can help stop it, go to frc.org/traffic. Again, that's frc.org/traffic.
Gender reassignment surgery. Once rare and unusual, it is now becoming more and more common. Across the nation, transgender activists are pushing for this costly, extreme, and unproven procedure to be declared medically necessary so that it can be paid for with taxpayer dollars. The problem for these activists is that the evidence is not on their side. In 2016, the Centers for Medicare and Medicaid Services examined 33 studies on the subject and declared that there was not enough evidence to determine whether gender reassignment surgery improved health outcomes. One study found that those who had undergone gender reassignment surgery showed a suicide rate that was 19 times higher than the general population. Declaring gender reassignment surgery to be medically necessary is not only inaccurate, but dangerous. To view FRC's full report on this important issue, visit frc.org/surgery. Again, that's frc.org/surgery.
If you had to make a law, where would you start? America's founding fathers determined law from a fixed source, God. But culture has shifted the focus to man's self-determined law. If truth is no longer determined by God, it becomes subjective and open to interpretation. In an incisive new paper, Peter Johnston traces the origins of these dangerous trends in American law and the importance of staying true to our founding principles. To view FRC's new publication, go to frc.org/decay.
The Family Research Council had the pleasure of hosting Dr. Michael Paulson to speak about how Christians can respond to arguments against religious liberty. Dr. Paulson argues that religion is different and deems exemptions within the law. A religious person believes in God, and God's sovereignty requires complete devotion, whereas government only requires allegiance and civil duties. The Constitution itself treats religion differently, giving America religious liberty and the freedom to exercise. Visit frc.org/university to hear more about this issue.
Hello, everybody. That was a great interview between Senator Lindsey Graham and our own Tony Perkins. I'm Russ Jones, sitting in for Tony. It's Friday. You're listening to Washington Watch, powered by the Family Research Council. Give us a call, 866-377-2234. I've got a really big day tomorrow. I think a while back I shared with you, but tomorrow I get sworn in. I get commissioned as a first lieutenant in the Mississippi State Guard. All voluntary. It's a non-combat guard here in Mississippi. If you remember back in the day, the state militias were formed before the different branches of the military. The Mississippi State Guard is formally aligned with the Army. And tomorrow I get my commissioning and will train with the Mississippi State Guard on one Saturday a month and get called upon to come alongside groups like FEMA and whatnot if there's a natural disaster. You never get deployed outside of the state. You know, a lot of these men and women are veterans in the military, and I never had a chance to serve. It's one of my regrets in life. And at this stage of my life, I can't tell you how excited I am, how honored I am. And I will get to give and receive my first salute tomorrow in the digital uniform of the Army that is worn with the Mississippi State Guard. So I just wanted to share that with you. Going to have some pictures be posting online. You can see these photos and whatnot on Twitter, at Russ Jones Speaks. I'll be posting them there. And all this great content on the radio show, you can go find at TonyPerkins.com. All of this, all the interviews are are archived there. You can download them and listen as you are available. Give us a call, 866-372-7234. What are you doing to protect the unborn? Like to hear your stories. Let's go to Ricky in Baton Rouge. Ricky, welcome to Washington Watch.
Thank you. I would just like to state, I don't know why I even have to bring this up, but, you know, the Democrats is what used the A-word to describe what's actually cold-blooded, premeditated murder of little children. Mm-hmm. And Christians, for some reason, use the Democratic terminology, and we will never win the war against the slaughter of the innocents using their terminology. We have to use what the Bible calls the slaughter, the butchering, premeditated, cold-blooded murder of little bitty unborn babies. Once we stop using the A-word and describe what murder is of the little babies, then we'll start winning the war against murdering the little babies. Now, of course, I'm just a peon, voice in the wilderness, so nothing got if I say it. But if the leaders of the Christian movement stop using the A-word, because it's just a little sugar-coated, nice, pleasant term for premeditated, cold-blooded murder of your innocent children in the womb. Once we start using that terminology, and we shot people awake to what it really is, and then we may start winning the war against murdering the babies in the womb. Then right. We stop, start using that little A-word, nothing's going to happen. So, anyhow.
All right, Ricky. All right. Thank you, Ricky in Baton Rouge. You're listening to Washington Watch. Give us a call, 866-372-7234, 866-372-7234. What are you doing to push back against the culture in your community? Are you seeing improvements? Are you seeing advances? What are you doing? How are you involved? Love to hear from you what you're doing. It doesn't matter if you're young or old, or you're never too old to serve. At least that's what I'm learning. And that there's a dirty little word that I just have a hard time embracing, and that's called retirement. I don't see myself ever really retiring. Maybe slowing down, but never really retiring. And, I get the joy of watching my mother and father-in-law who just do circles around us all. They work so hard, and they continue to serve for the Lord. And that's what's exciting, to be involved with the Family Research Council. So many people are dedicated and standing up every day in the trenches, fighting for faith, family, and freedom. You're listening to Washington Watch. I'm Russ Jones, sitting in for Tony Perkins. Give us a call, 866-372-7234, 866-372-7234. So, it's the weekend. Looking forward to, my commissioning tomorrow. I'll tell you about it the next time I'm hosting on the show. I'll let you know how that goes. Hopefully, I won't have to do too many push-ups. Let's go to Julio in Canton, Texas. Welcome to the radio show. Did I get your name right?
Yeah, you totally did. Yeah, my friends call me JC. I'm Julio Cesar, but my friends call me JC, so feel free to call me JC.
Okay.
I just wanted to give my testimony, let people know that, abortion should not be legal. I shouldn't have to pay taxes in order for that. The only reason why I'm saying that is because I grew up Catholic, and, where Catholics are completely against abortion. Anyways, what I'm getting to, in 2014, moved to Dallas, was dating a girl, got her pregnant. I've never been in that situation, so what was my first thought to go to? Oh, I can't do this, I need to seek my other options. I don't even like saying it, because my son is with me now. He's two, man, he's the most awesome little dude ever, man. So all the guys, all the boys out there, doing what you're doing with your girlfriend, if that comes, if there's a time in your life where you're going to have a baby, don't take that route, man. There's nothing like being a dad, dude. It's the most fun thing in the world. You got a little best friend. He will always be your best friend. He looks up to me. You know what I'm saying? He's just a bundle of love, man. And I can't get enough of him. Anytime I'm away at work, I miss him. And I didn't think I'd be good at doing the dad thing, but it comes to you naturally. So, right. Fellas, guys, y'all just do it by nature. I don't know how to explain myself.
There you go. Well, you keep pushing in. You keep pushing in, and that little guy never let him be confused about who his dad is. And I appreciate your story. Thank you for calling. Let's go to Sherry in Houston, Texas. Sherry in Houston. Welcome to the show.
I'm gonna eat it. Thank you. Yeah. So when you're asking about what are we doing to end abortion in our generation, we're the generation that fought that deadly lie. And there's a petition. Rand Paul has a petition right now that's life at conception, right? And so if enough people sign it, it will be made into law. But people have to go to Senator Rand Paul, look up Life at Conception Act, and sign the petition. And I think he's only got a few million, but once the majority signs it, then we'll save millions of lives. And on the abortion issue, I'd like to share, because I was one of the ones, sadly, that fought that deadly lie. And so I'd like to share my experience just to let people know what it's really about. So I let my boyfriend bring me over there. When I went in there, I saw hundreds of women before me, right, from all walks of life, bloody tools they were using. When I got in the room, I was terrified, and I was like, oh, no. I came to the wrong place. Y'all can keep my money. I just want to get out of here. And they said, no, ma'am, it's not your money that we want. They held me down and forced a border on the spot with those bloody tools. They're giving women diseases. So 5 years later, I end up with cancer cells. So I go to the doctor, and they said, I'm not going to ask you if you ever had an abortion. I want to know how many times, because at your age, you would not have almost suffered with cancer.
Hey, Cherie, you're breaking up, and we're not getting all your story. But appreciate you calling, and you're really choppy there. And maybe you can call back, and we'll get a better signal there. Let's go to Keith in Jackson, Tennessee. Keith, how you doing on this Friday afternoon?
Doing good, Russ. Thank you. Congrats on your appointment into the military down there. Good to have you into the family.
Well, thank you. Like I said, it's an all-voluntary unit. It's a non-pay, non-combat, but still affiliated with the Army. And given that I didn't get the chance to, or I did have the chance, it just didn't make sense at that time that I'm able to go back and do that, I'm grateful.
Well, I'm grateful that you got the heart for it. That's the main thing. I'm a Vietnam era vet, and that's all I look for, is what's in a man's heart, and you got it going for it like that. I tried to get a hold of Paul Ryan today. Couldn't even get his website or his phone calls or either. It was all crashed.
I'm sorry. Who were you? Paul Ryan. Gotcha.
Yes, sir. And Mitch McConnell too. Couldn't get through his phone. It was crashed out evidently, but I was able to give him an email and tell him about the stop the fake filibuster.
We'll be watching that. I think they've got till tonight, and then we'll see where they're going with all that, and or the government will shut down. But we'll see if they all come together. There's a divide there right now, so we'll see what happens. So anyway, let's go to, we are watching that, by the way. I've got one eye on the news here, see if there's any developments while we're still on the air. Let's go to Artis in Michigan. Welcome to the show.
Hi, thanks for taking my call. And I'm calling because I'm not nearly as impressed with Lindsey Graham's as you appear to be and as Tony Perkins is. I'm very disappointed in his record, and I think he is a rhino through and through. And when the issue of defunding Planned Parenthood came up months ago, he is one who refuses to get rid of the filibuster in the Senate, which would be so helpful to defund Planned Parenthood. And I don't know how you can defend that. I'm really disappointed in him and anybody who thinks he's a friend of Christians and conservatives.
Well, thank you for your call, Artis. We have known Senator Graham for quite some time, and the folks at Family Research Council, and have seen his work and seen his strong support for the pro-life cause. And he continues to be one of the lawmakers that are pushing. He's the one that's authoring this Protection Act of the Unborn, the pain bill at 5 months. And he was on with Tony earlier. It says we should not be one of the seven nations like China and North Korea that allow an abortion at 5 months. Let's go to Cheryl in Evergreen, Texas. Cheryl, welcome to the show.
Thank you, and thank you for having me. I just called to say that for years I've worked with Texas Right to Life, and now that I'm Social Security age, my Social Security tithe goes to my church, but I still work for an insurance company. Mm-hmm. And so my paycheck, I take my tithe out of that for Texas Right. For many years, our family ranch is well over 100 years old, and for the past, I would say, 12 years, we had the Texas Right to Life young people that were going to college. We would have them come out here, and we would share with them our faith and our belief in the right for these children to be born. And we'd have hay rides for them. I'm too old to do that now since my husband passed, but I was always honored to serve my Lord to work with Texas Right.
Well, good for you.
Babies are being killed.
Yeah, good for you, and we need more folks like yourself who appreciate what you've been doing. Got time just for a couple more calls. Let's go to Oklahoma City. Doyle, welcome to the show.
Hey, Mr. Rush.
Yes, sir. I'm good. How are you?
Doing just fine. Just about the previous man, who seemed pretty passionate.
About the A word?
Yes, the A word.
Abortion.
As I'm growing up, I'm trying to become more passive. But I would definitely have to agree that it's murder when they're so innocent. When the Lord, He loves everybody, but I'd have to agree with him. Maybe not in such a forceful way, but.
You know, one of the things that we got to hear from Jeannie Mancini, the president of March for Life, is that she's seeing more and more young people come on board. And maybe language does matter. I don't know. But this younger generation, it's different. And every generation has its own vocabulary, has its own way of seeing things. But I'm encouraged to see younger people take this issue more seriously and begin to see the viability of an unborn baby. Linda in Fort Wayne, Indiana. Hi, Linda.
Yes, hello. Hi. I would like to tell you, many, many years ago, one of the ladies in our club who was a nurse had to help in the delivery room or help with an abortion. She gave up her career of being a nurse because she was made to do that. Ever since that time, my children are little. I now have 3 grown-up children, 9 grandchildren. I have contributed to the pro-life campaign. So I back the legislature with everything I can, my measly little $10 a month or whatever.
But hey, $10 is $10.
And that's what they tell me, and I'm glad if I can give more, I do. But how anybody could do that is more than I can understand. But I love children, so.
Well, Linda, thank you.
For had to give up her career as a nurse is also a minister's wife that was made to do that in the delivery room.
Well, we're out of time, Linda. Thank you so much for being a warrior of the cause. And thank you for calling the show. Brian in Carthage, sorry we didn't get to you. We're out of time today. But friends, I'm Russ Jones, been sitting in for Tony Perkins. I leave you with this. Before I formed you in the womb, I knew you. And before you were born, I consecrated you. From Jeremiah 1:5. Blessings, friends. You've been listening to Washington Watch.
Washington Watch with Tony Perkins is powered by the Family Research Council and is entirely listener-supported. For more information on anything you've heard today, or to find out how you can partner with us in our ongoing efforts to promote faith, family, and freedom, visit TonyPerkins.com. Also, to leave a comment about Washington Watch, call our watch line at 1-866-372-7234. Again, that's 1-866-372-7234. 372-7234.